Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is Celtic Underground at number 60. This week's guest stands 6 feet two. Actually, when you're in his presence, he stands a lot higher than that. Anyway, stands 6 feet two, had a 20-year career at Celtic, and a 15-year career of international football. He played 483 times for Celtic. Strangely enough, was a one-man club. It wasn't a one-man club, but I'll touch on that in the podcast. Played 80 times for his country and never scored a single goal. Must have been rubbish, eh? But he did stop a lot of goals because our guest is Mr. Paki Bonner. And Paki has a book coming out called The Last Line. And it is out this week. And there's various launch events throughout the UK and Ireland, and perhaps maybe even further overseas. But in our podcast, Pat talks about his career, talks about how luck comes into things, that you can be in the right place at the right time. I talk about some of the good fortune that surrounds his career, i.e. he made his debut for Celtic on St. Patrick's Day, made his debut for the Republic on his 21st birthday, and other events such as that. Anyway, the one thing I have to apologise for in advance, we're not the BBC, so you meet people for podcasts in suitable locations that are convenient for all. And Paki and I picked the very quiet corner of Parklands to have this chat. And as you'll hear, part of the way through, people decided that that very quiet corner should be the place that they should let their kids run wild. I have a five-year-old, so I understand kids running wild, but also understand trying to record a podcast, it can be a pain in the backside. So if you want to listen to this podcast, there's one more thing I would say, is one of his launch events is an evening with Paki Bonner taking place at Walkabout on Thursday the 29th of October. Doors open 6:30pm with it starting at 7:30pm, and it'll be Paki and two special guests. You can buy tickets online. If you go to Ticket Scotland, you'll be able to buy tickets online, which cost £7.50 plus a £1.25 booking fee. Or you can wait to the end of this podcast, answer the question, email harrybradycu@gmail.com, and you might win two tickets. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Paki Bonner, along with all the business. So I'm joined now by, I'm actually going to call you Mr. Bonner, because here's the first question I've got for you. I like to get people's names right. Are you Pat, Paddy, Paki, Patrick, or Mr. Bonner?
I'm not Mr. Bonner. I'm not Paddy. I hate Paddy.
Right.
I don't like it. I was christened Patrick, but I had an uncle called Paki Joe. And I was always going to get Paki, and it's a very West of Ireland name, as many know. Yep. A lot of people over there would have been called it. Coming here, obviously, it was a little bit tricky.
Yes.
And then people started calling me Pat, but I do like Paki. It makes me kind of unique, maybe in one way.
Uh-huh.
So people know exactly who they're referring to when they say Paki Bonner, you know.
So, Paki Bonner. First question we ask everybody when we come in the Celtic Underground podcast is to get their credentials. So what was your first ever game, football game, and who was your first hero?
Wow, that's a tricky question. It's been so long back, but I suppose born in Donegal,
mm-hmm.
we were probably influenced a lot by English football.
Yeah.
Celtic was there, but we hadn't watched Celtic. You know, I remember my first game watching Celtic was a cup final when Andy Lynch scored, mm-hmm. way back then.
77.
Many years ago. And that was really the first one that I really seen Celtic on TV, and I hadn't been over to Scotland, but I'd watched them come over and play a couple of games in Finn Park,
mm-hmm.
when they came over. There was a few boating disasters and different things that happened over in Donegal, and they came over, and I remember watching the Tommy Burns and those guys as young. They were probably young
couples,
and they were only a couple of years older than me, so when I was probably about 15 and 16, they were only 17, 18, but they were Celtic players.
Yeah.
And they came over, and so I went up to Finn Park to watch them play. I suppose my first real memory of a game was again Finn Hearts, because that was our local League of Ireland team, mm-hmm. and watching them play against Derby County, mm-hmm. believe it or not, in the Cup Winners' Cup, I think it was. And they beat over the two legs Finn Harps 14-0. 14-0. And at that time, that Derby County team was Archie Devils, yes, were David Nish, a whole host, Hinton, Hector, Mosley, Roger Davis, Charlie Cook was one of them at the time. So those were the names that I would have been very familiar with, and to come up to Finn Park and watch them.
It would just been about the time they were challenging Leeds for the
that's
title.
Right. Yep. And I remember actually Finn Harps, they were probably the local hero team for me, and watching the Brendan Bradleys and the Charlie Ferries and that running out first to warm up and running out. And I remember they had a blue strip on, and then Derby came out and they were tan, they had big thighs on them, they had a white strip, you know, yeah. And it was just night and day actually. So that would probably be my first real memory. Uh-huh. Of watching something live.
Yep.
Going back, I suppose my first memory of football on TV, and at that time we probably only got a TV into the house in 1969, and that was Leicester City playing Man City,
yep.
and a cup final, and watching that game, and then the World Cup in 70. Sitting up with my dad, I was 10 years old, sitting up in the house and watching the game, and watching Czech Republic team play, and I can't remember who scored, and him running and going down on his knees blessing himself the same way as Peter Grant did. Do you remember that?
Tommy Burns.
That was unique, and they were in a white strip, the Czech Republic team, and then of course Italy and Brazil and England and all of that, so and that ignited, I suppose, the passion. Well, we had soccer in Donegal, we were very strong, but it kind of ignited that dream in me that I wanted to go off. And
was there any particular goalkeeper that made you want to be a goalkeeper, or when did you decide you want to be a keeper?
Well, my heroes in goalkeeping at that time was Pat Jennings, because Irish, playing with Spurs, and I suppose I hate to admit it, but I probably supported Spurs because of that fact when I was a young boy. Along with Celtic, of course, because Celtic would be the Scottish team, and I'll talk to you about Celtic in a minute and how that influenced me, but Spurs, and then he went to Arsenal. Peter Shilton, and Ray Clemens. Those were the three
were the big names of British football at the time for goalkeeping.
They were.
Jennings was, you know, and then it was Shilton and Clemens were alternating.
They were, they were. But they were kind of different. Pat was kind of very much like myself, played Gaelic football when we were young, but he played and he was made saves with his feet, and he would catch a cross one-handed, and he had the long hair and he could kick the ball a mile. And then Ray was very athletic. And Peter Shilton was like a rubber ball. He was making saves. He wasn't the one that would come and take crosses and all that the way that maybe Ray or Pat could do, you know.
Yeah.
So there were a bit of difference in them all, in the three of them. Then, Bob Wilson was there, and Gordon Banks had gone. So those were my heroes. And you were watching the TV, and you went outside, and you tried to replicate what they were doing.
Yeah.
In the garden. It wasn't the garden. It was a bit of green grass in front of the house. So you went out there, and that's the way. That's how I ignited my passion for it. You know, but Celtic, funnily enough, Celtic were always our Scottish club. Over in Donegal, you were, and the people travelled over and back to work. My mum and dad was born in Edinburgh, born in Edinburgh, married in Edinburgh, so they worked over here. My next door neighbour, who had a huge influence on me, my godfather, in fact, he had a picture of the Lisbon Lions, a huge picture up in his hall, and while I'd never seen them live, I could name the whole team from that picture. So I was indoctrinated with Celtic from a very, very young age. But we had the influence then of English football, and there was a combination of both.
So you had always remember in my being ingrained in my brain, KG Rovers.
Yeah,
that's where
the name. The name, KG Rovers, absolutely.
And then did you go for trials with Leicester?
I did, and funnily enough, when we talk about Peter Shilton, that was his club.
Yeah.
And he had left, he'd gone to Stoke City at the time, and I came over, and I was over and back to Leicester City on trial. I played in the Youth Cup, and Cage Rovers was our local team, and Cage Rovers was a team that was managed by Manus McCall, a man in a wheelchair.
Right.
Unique. And we had one pitch, no dress rooms, yeah. No changeover in the house. Come over and then run back over the road, or get a lift over and wash in the house, you know. Those were the days.
So how did you manage to get from trial at Leicester, KG Rovers to Celtic? Was it Sean Fallon?
Sean Fallon was the chief scout at the time of Celtic after. I got into the Irish youth team, mm-hmm. and Sean was over watching games, and he came and watched me play and shook me hand and said hello. And then a couple of months later, the phone call came to Manus McCall, in fact, and he came down to the house and told me that they wanted me over to on trial.
So Sean Fallon brings it across to you. You said the first Celtic game you were really aware of was Andy Lindstrom in the 77 Cup final. So you are a young guy, yeah. When Sean Fallon brings you over.
Yeah, very young. I was only 17. I had the experience of Leicester City, didn't work out, and Sean brought me over, and that was. I didn't think it went that well, but anyway, you know, they obviously were desperate for a goalkeeper somehow, and. I got the word to go back at Easter and go in a tournament out to France, and from that again I didn't think it went very well. And Sean, I got the word then that Celtic was Jock Stein was going to come over and wanted to sign me, which was incredible.
So your debut was on St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's
was that
Day.
Intentional that you played on St. Patrick's Day?
No, not at all. I actually didn't know until the day before, really.
Right.
But Neil came to me on a Friday and said he was putting me in, you know. So I had no way of really thinking about it, or even worrying about it.
Yeah.
It was to just go for it, you know. So I played against Motherwell. Bobby Lennon scored two, which is incredible, playing with Elizabeth Lyon. I did all right. I don't think I had much to do, too much to do, you know. But it was the experience of being in a dressing room, preparing yourself, thinking about making a debut for a Celtic football club, the club, going out in front of the jungle, through that tunnel, facing up to the jungle, and going out to play, and how could I handle myself?
Yeah.
The realisation that I actually could do it,
mm-hmm.
after being coming from Cage Rovers, almost, you know, I made my debut in 79, I joined from Celtic in May 78, so almost 6 months later, instead of being over in Cage Rovers, out in a junior pitch, and middle, close to the Atlantic, and suddenly you're at Celtic Football Club making your debut, the realisation of that, and being able to do it, and get away with it, to that point.
And the thing that strikes me about being so young, I mean, what from the outside look like strong personalities, people like and big proper pros, people like Roy Aitken and Danny McGrain in front of you, and as we talked about before we start this podcast, the goalkeeper's job is to be in charge of that penalty.
Yeah, but I think at that stage that came to me later.
I assume you weren't in charge of that.
No, definitely not. But you know, one of the things I used to do a lot when I was a kid, even when I was 16, 17, when I got into the team at Cager, I used to shout a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, possibly I didn't know what I was shouting, but I shouted and organised and tried, and that was a nature I had. I've always said it. Mick McCarthy was also a big shouter, if you know what I mean. When he came to Sally, he was always telling people what to do in front of him. And it's probably down, and I realised it myself, it was down to fear more than anything else. Stop the thing getting near me and have a chance. And that was kind of within me, but I was always a shouter. The older I got, the more knowledge I got, the more experience I got, I knew what to shout and how to shout it and when to shout it. But when you're young, it was probably a nervous tension more than anything else. Like, there's a lot of goalkeepers go the other way. They don't say anything.
Yeah.
You know, now people are much more calmer because they have to play with their feet and they have to be in a better mind. They have to have more stability about them when the ball comes to them, so they can't have to think about the game more. I was about stopping things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make sure that, come on, go and head that ball, or I'm coming for the game. So I was a bit more simpler then, but that was me. So I probably fitted in. And I remember, you know, Andy Lynch actually coming to me saying, listen, we need a goalkeeper here. You know, this going to be dominant and going to go in there and do them all. So, and the likes of maybe even Johnny Doyle. Johnny Doyle did an article in the paper and he picked out myself, Charlie and Danny Craney as a three that he thought that might make it. And that gave you huge confidence when somebody like that, a senior pro, is and they watch you in training all the time, and they make their mind up fairly quickly, but they pick you out and almost push you up to the top of the air list. It gives you great confidence.
Yeah, and did it surprise you? I mean, what age? You were 20?
I was 19.
19,
yeah.
Did it surprise you?
Sorry, when I made my debut, I was 18.
Right.
I was 18, 1979, so my birthday's in May, so right. I didn't quite, so I was 18 years old.
Did it surprise you when you then became the first team goalkeeper?
Well, what happened then was I made my debut and then I went back out to the team. Obviously, Billy was trying me out.
Yeah.
And about 2 or 3 weeks later, he put me back in again against Motherwell, away from home this time.
Right.
And, you know, my grandmother died a couple of days beforehand and I knew I was playing and I didn't go home. And I was probably, you know, my mind was, but going to Motherwell, Motherwell was always, I found, a really tricky pitch for a goalkeeper to play on.
Right.
And the reason for that mostly was that it sloped from left to right and from the top to the bottom, if you know what I mean. And it wasn't a flat pitch. It was about, I don't know, if you probably looked at the statistics, around it, maybe about 8 feet of a drop, but it sloped both ways. Tannadice was a bit the same. Hibbs was a bit the same.
Yeah,
Hibbs was straight down the middle. You know what I mean? It wasn't side to side. But Dundee was always tricky. So it was always tricky for a goalkeeper, I think, to play, especially crosses and all of that kind of stuff. And it was a tough place to go. And we won the game that night 4-3 and I let 3 goals in. And it was a fault for one of the goals. And then I went back out of the team. I was out of the team then for probably about nearly a season. And Peter was back in playing. And he won the Scottish Cup. It was fantastic at Hamden and all of that type of stuff. So, and I didn't think, my contract was, and I felt, was maybe coming to an end at Celtic. I didn't know whether I was going to get a chance. And then luckily, Peter broke a bone in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only me and him. You know, my Bays had been sold. So I had to go on, unless I went and bought somebody. So they went with me, and I got a run in the team. I knew I was going to be in for about 6 games.
Did you see that broke his hand? Was it a pre-season game against Manchester United?
No, it was the training before. I played in Danny McGrain test.
So you played in the Danny McGrain test.
Absolutely.
Peter had broken his hand.
You know, which was incredible luck.
Yep.
You need luck. You definitely need luck.
Uh-huh.
And I went in. I did all right, and then I got in, and I got, and that was me. And then almost continually for about 10 years, bar maybe one or two wee injuries that I had, and Peter played. But you know, that was the start. So luck comes with it. You needed a determination. You needed some sort of ability. But I wouldn't underestimate that word luck at the time. And you need a manager who takes a chance with you.
Uh-huh.
And Billy did that. Could be another manager, and we bring somebody in alone.
Well, you know, everybody goes on about the concept of Celtic playing with youth.
Yes.
But it takes a brave manager to play with you, and particularly when you're at Celtic and you can afford to go and buy a ready-made player.
Yeah.
And even though it wasn't buying and selling the way that clubs do now back then, you could have still gone and picked up an experience. You could have gone and got a Hamish McCartney.
Of course, and I owe a lot to Billy because of that. I think it was easier then. The tradition was there to bring young players into the team. When you think Roy was in, Tommy was in. I'm trying to think who else would have been in that time, but there were people who were came through the ranks, and that was a big objective at that time for Celtic, and it would always remain that. And then when it came to my day, I got in. You know, Mark Reid got in, Charlie got in, Danny Craney got in, then later Paul got in, Peter Grant got in. So the tradition was there to bring the kids, and I think there was an expectation on Billy to give the young people a chance, if you know what I mean. And then they would buy in the odd one. You know,
yeah.
But there was no Europeans at the time.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and there were very few English, if you know what I mean. Mick McCarthy came up, and he would be the first. Really,
that was
big
really as a consequence of what happened with Rangers in '86, transforming the concept.
Yeah, that's right.
We're
bringing in that type of player. So we were lucky that we were in that era that I think young players got a real chance, and it wasn't just one; it was four or five getting the chance. you know, even the likes of John Weir, for example, got into the team. You know, and Billy Russell was in the reserve. You know, and Peter McGee were in the reserves, didn't quite. He got in a few games. Jim Casey got in, if you remember.
Yeah, Jim Casey, yeah.
Jim Casey got a chance in the team. So we all got chances. It was up to you then to try to hold it down. And being a goalkeeper, and Peter being injured, I was always going to get a run in the team for at least 6 weeks, I think. And it was up to me then, and that gave me a real opportunity to show them that I could actually do okay.
You reminded me there by mentioning Mark Reid. The first Celtic team I could say off the top of my head was Bonham McGrain, Reid, Aitken, McAdam, McLeod, Proven, McStay, McGarvey, Burns, and Nicholas.
Was there songs made about that team? No.
No.
Yeah, that's so very good. I'm impressed.
So that's actually the first sort of team I could do. So when you mentioned Mark Reid there, it brought it all back.
Yeah.
You then on your tweet, you're talking about luck. You made your debut for Celtic on St Patrick's Day. You made your debut for Ireland on your 21st birthday.
Absolutely. And
there's
that's
some sort of landmark event.
There is, and it's nice to have them to look back on. because of those dates, you can remember them very. They come to the top of your head very quickly. Yeah, we were on tour actually at the end of the season with Ireland, and a lot of the guys. The major guys probably weren't around, didn't come. We actually played West Germany B in the first game, and I didn't play that game. And then we went to a place called Bydgoszcz out to Poland, which was 5 hours from Warsaw on a bus at the end of a season. And we went down and played, and it was because it was my 21st, it made a special. I lost a goal within about a minute in that game.
90 seconds.
But the other thing, special thing about it for me was that being a twin, having a twin brother at home, and it was the 21st birthday, it was very special.
Yeah.
And I always remember Jimmy McGee, who was one of the big Irish commentators doing the game, and him almost saying happy birthday to Dennis back in Ireland over the radio.
Yeah.
doing the commentary, and that's which I couldn't really probably at that time. You didn't have mobile phones or anything to speak to him on a day. So that was it. Yeah.
David O'Leary scored an OG this year.
Did he? Yeah, I know. Well, we won't mention the score, that's for sure. But it was nice that was a start. But you know, the funny thing about Ireland in that period, that was 1981. I only had 9 international caps by the time Jack took over in, what was it, in 86?
Yeah.
So for over a 5-year period, I only played 9.
Yeah, because only Harry went with
Seamus McDonough.
That's right, yeah.
And that was the situation, and it was a frustrating enough time for me, because at that stage then I was 26 years old, thinking, wow, what's going on here? And I was won a few championships and cups with Celtic and playing well, playing okay, you know what I mean, playing enough that I felt that I should have had probably a bit more, you know. Yeah.
So if we stick on Ireland a minute, because that's then the other thing, you could not have coincided your career with a more golden period to be an international footballer.
And it was incredible.
I mean, you were at Euro 88, Italia 90, 92.
No, we didn't go to 92.
No,
we missed out. 94.
And then 94 USA.
And then I went back as a coach then with Mick in 2002 out in Japan. So it was a really, but under Jack, I was there from the day Jack came in to the day Jack left.
Yeah.
And it was a golden era. There's no question about it. Although we didn't win anything apart from his first pre-season or pre-tournament out in Iceland, that was the only cup we ever won. You know.
Yeah, but for a country the size of Ireland, same would be for Scotland. Winning the Euros or winning the World Cup would be almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it would have been.
Being there and overachieving on expectation, that's enough.
I think that Euro 88 was the start of it, and because we'd been drawn in the same group as England, and because we beat England in that very first game with Ray's goal, and I played very well in the game, one of them a shutout, I think that captured the imagination of the neutral fan in Ireland. They weren't quite bought in yet, they were most of them, but we had grown incredibly from that moment on. And then getting to a World Cup, the very first World Cup, and coming out of the group, and then getting to the quarter final.
There was
something incredible that happened in Ireland at that time. You know, we the GAA over there, and I played GAA. I played for my county at all levels, senior. We have the rugby, which is very strong now. Yeah. They've done well, and we've soccer, and then all the other sports and great sports people that we had. But at United, every single person if you were a J-man, you were still watching what was going on. If you were a rugby man, if you were, and it wasn't just the ones who travelled with the soccer team when things were bad. Everybody, and the other thing that it captured was the normal person who wasn't even into sport.
Yeah,
the old man and woman in the house out in the middle of Donegal, living on their own in a house, not into sport. Suddenly, oh jeez! And I went back there, and I went into many of them houses afterwards. And they loved Jack. They loved the crack. They loved, oh, Jesus. And they had great stories around it and all that. So it was a phenomenon that I can't explain. And it was a phenomenon that I wish I could bottle it up and sell it, because it was just a wonderful period with good players, but a unique manager that just captured the imagination.
Well, let me ask you the manager, because there's an element of holding press conferences and getting players' names wrong. And whether it was intentional or not, but the perception of a guy who was sort of bumbling through it. Was he like that intentionally, unintentionally? Was he like that? How was he like with the players as a manager, as a manager of people? What was he like?
Most of the players loved him. There'd be one or two who left fairly early. Liam, for example. Liam wouldn't probably say to you, although he admired Jack and he admired everything, but you know, Liam's career finished off fairly quickly under Jack.
Yeah.
Jack tried to change Liam from being a player who went back and picked the ball up and from the centre backs and build the game, to a player who could play off the front man, which rightly so, because he didn't want to put the ball at risk. But Jack was a very, 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 very clever. He didn't overcomplicate matters. He didn't play a game that maybe was easy on the eye of what we see now.
Yeah.
But very, very clever. He had all those madness about him that I think most managers need to have.
Yeah.
We loved him. I loved him particularly. I had my arguments with him the way that I would have my arguments with Big Billy in the mall. I stood up for myself with him. But he gave us responsibility. And he was also a guy, I think, who treated you as an international player.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't come in the drill. We weren't kids, or we didn't do anything out there, you know. We were adults, and I think he respected that. If you come to your international team, you've been around the game a bit, you're not a bad player, you're doing it for your country. And he created an environment that also made us won games. Before that, no disrespect to anybody else, but we went away from home at times and didn't believe we were going to win.
Yeah.
Now we believe we're going to win anywhere. It took Jack a while for that to happen. You know, we beat Brazil in Dublin in a friendly when they beat Scotland and drew with England. We were the one nation that on that tour to beat them. And that in itself, and then people started to say, maybe the way that Jack wants us to play is not bad. And there was a simplicity to it. And it also, you know that thing about capturing the imagination of the Irish GA player in rugby? They want lots of action. They want high pressure. They want from goal to goal, end to end, scoring points. And we played the game a little bit that way.
Uh-huh.
But what he was clever about is he went to the European Championships before that, or to the World Cup before that, and he watched the European teams. And he realised that most people play with a sweeper, most people drop off, allow the centre-halves to play a little bit, and centre-halves take risk and all that. He says, if we're going to upset them, we need to get in their faces, we need to press them, you know, and not let them build the game, and then we'll see how good they are. And then suddenly you start getting a few results, and then you start believing. And we had a great team spirit.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great, and everybody wanted to come. And once the success started, and we got, you know, and we got lucky also. Do you remember that word luck that I said before?
Uh-huh.
We got lucky, like Gary Mackay's goal, we wouldn't have been in the European Championship.
Yeah.
So that bit of luck was needed by Jack also, and us. But once we got confidence as a team, you know, I talk about it in relation to the team that beat Scotland, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible team, and the clubs that they played with. Housing Gold, Celtic. That night there was Paul McGrath right back, Manchester United. Kevin Moore, Manchester United. Mick McCarthy, Man City. Came up then to Celtic.
Yeah.
Left back, Ronnie Whelan, Liverpool. Right side, Ray Houghton, Liverpool. Midfield, Liam Brady, Juventus. Mark Lawrence in Liverpool. On the left, Tony Galvin, Spurs. Up front, Frank Staple, Manchester United, and John Aldridge, Liverpool. You know what I mean? Won in European competition, and see when we got the confidence that Jack instilled in us, and we started believing ourselves. He didn't have to really manage; just kept it going.
Well, the key then, if you're an international manager and you've got those players, you might not have 20 Frank Stapleton's, Liam Brady's. So the key is to make sure that that 11 that you just mentioned want to turn up.
Absolutely.
And you've not got the call-offs.
Oh, aye. And I think once you start getting success, and people love going to Ireland anyway, let's face it, they love going over to Dublin, and Jack gave us enough freedom and for us to go and enjoy ourselves. But it was serious when it came down to the business. We didn't come in 6 days before the game. We came in on a Monday morning, or Monday around about 2 o'clock. We trained the next day. We went to the picture, Monday night as a group.
Mm-hmm.
Trained the next day, went for a walk on a Wednesday, went out and played a game on a Wednesday and ran over teams. You know what I mean? Because we were good players, and that was well, and that was what most teams did, you know. But it was a real serious about it. But you come to Dublin, you have to love coming to Dublin.
Yeah.
And most of the guys did love it.
So that's an international manager's way of getting the best out of people. Using current context, I get the impression that's how Gordon Strachan's dealing with Scotland players.
I think so.
You're mature, professional athletes who know what you're doing, and that's why you're playing. And so he seems to have created a bit of a culture there.
Yeah.
But it may be a different culture you need to have as a club manager. Yeah. So you played under Billy McNeil, Liam Brady, Lou McCarry, and Tommy Burns.
Yes.
Give me an overview, without being personal about people, give me an overview of those people, what was good about them, what was not good about them as
managers. Well, what you got to remember, they were all Celtic people.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. So you give them total respect to a point, because they were singing off the same hymn sheet as you.
Uh-huh.
They were ex-Celtic, they were guys, legends before they come. Then you get to know them. Billy McNeil was my first manager. I have total respect for Billy for giving me the opportunity. But Billy was a difficult man when I was young. There's no question. Billy was, you know, he wore the club on his sleeve, and he was out there, chest out, very dominant, his way, but he led from the front.
Quite emotional if you got beaten?
Yeah, he could be. But I think most managers around days were. The winners were anyway. You know, in the dressing room and boots go flying and so on and so on. But he was a leader.
Right.
You always seen that, dressed well, stood in the front, led from the front, said what he had to say, fairly dominant on you as a young kid, you know, put there was pressure on. But the Celtic Football Club at the end of days had standards, you know. We had to wear a shirt and tie every day coming to a game. We didn't come in with jeans on. We couldn't, unshaven and all that kind of stuff. I remember one day in the dressing room.
Because the big thing was Danny McGrain was allowed a beard.
I know. Well, Danny had a beard, so he'd get on with it, you know. But I remember coming in the dressing room one day and I hung my jacket up on the peg. And Billy McNeil, hang your jacket up properly. I said, what do you mean? Do you see that little loop that's in the back of your jacket? That's for your jacket. Hang it up properly. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Now, I think his dad or his grandfather was from Lithuania and all that. But you could see that in Billy, you know? And they were brilliant. You know, and the likes of Frank Connor and those kind of people who led the reserves, they instilled those great things into you. And I still hold that strong, and I'm very strong in these things. And I think it's part of our culture anyway, Celtic Football Club, to do the right things and be better than everybody else. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But the demand on you know, Big Billy, me and him argued up in the training ground, we would argue. You know, he would almost tell me that what I was doing in goals, or that let me go and I'll show you. You know what I mean? I remember one day he stepped in to take crosses, you know, and I said, oh God, you know what I mean? So I found him tough when I was young.
Right.
As I got older with Billy, I loved the man. I respect him so much now, and I got to know him better,
mm-hmm.
and got more mature and all that. Now, and probably the second time around, I felt he was you know, so it was good that way, you know. And Davey was different. Davey was quiet, sat back, but you could see the steely eye, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know,
but he was also much closer in age to you that time.
Absolutely.
6-7 years old.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely. But he, he was different. You know what I mean? He was different, completely different in Billy in that way. He wasn't as up front, you know. But I found that I liked working under Davey. I'm very good friends with Davey now. Anytime I meet, and I get on really well, and I felt more older and more comfortable under him. You know what I mean? Lou was a different kettle of fish, you know. Lou came in, and I just felt at the time he came in, things were tough for him because the club was going nowhere, and it was just, for me, it wasn't as the way that I was brought up in Celtic, you know. And I'm not going to go in too much into it. Lou knows we didn't have a great relationship, didn't communicate that much, and he didn't stay around the club too long anyway to build that relationship.
Yeah.
So that was it. Liam, I grew up with Liam as a player with Ireland. We were close enough. You don't get close to Liam Brady.
Right.
Liam Brady said to me once that you have to be a bit of a loner to go to Europe, you know, to stay in Europe. And that kind of was Liam a little bit. He came into the club, he left me out, which he probably was right to leave me out.
Right.
At the time, I wasn't playing that well.
Because that's one of the things I was going to say. You're talking about resting players and various other things, and for outfield players, well, you can have four places in the midfield and somebody not playing somebody in. But goalkeepers, you're either in or out.
Yes.
And it's much more of a, if a goalkeeper's out, it's because he's dropped. He's not rested.
Yeah.
I mean, a bit different now. Craig Gordon, that's a
right.
League Cup game. He's
that's right.
It. So that must feel much more personal.
It was personal because I knew Liam well. And the problem I had with it at the time, there was lack of communication then after that between us. Liam didn't, we didn't sit down and talk. I think we sat down once or twice, but we didn't sit, and I went on for a period. But I did play a lot of games under Liam. I loved Mick Martin. He had in good friends with Mick. He's a nice man, great. He brought in Joe Jordan. I love Joe Jordan with a passion. I think he would be a man that I could, and I wish I could have worked longer with Joe. But Liam was just a little bit more standoffish, and I don't think probably that was necessary, because I knew Liam a long time, but that was the way Liam handled things, and that's the way he managed.
He was a bit more detached, a bit more of a loner, so that's obviously Japanese style.
That was his personality. That was his personality. And I can't, when I look now and I get older and I look back on all them experiences, all them experiences helped me to define who I am now, because you can look at you have to look inside yourself and look at your own personality and say, well, what am I? Maybe I'm a loner at times. Maybe I'm up front at times. Maybe I'm. Where's my profile? Where do I fit in? Do I fit into the right profile for certain things? And I think you have to adapt and change. I do many things now. I go off with UEFA, and I do coach education. I do tutoring, and I help do leadership talks, and I do different things. I go on TV and radio, as you know. And I think you have to adapt and change and play the part.
You play the part.
You play the part a little bit, but you have to be. You have to almost know yourself to do that, and know what is necessary. And I think the older you get, Liam Brady's a completely different person than he was way back then. He is now.
Yeah.
And I like Liam. I go out with Liam. And I think he is a different personality. The personality traits will be there. But if you know about them, I think you can change, or you can do something about it. Your weaknesses and strengths. You know, I'm very much that way, thinking about what do I have to do here. If you go out to Russia and you have to go and talk to the Russians, and there's eight countries there and they're all looking at you, you have to go and perform.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They don't know what I'm at, so I have to make a connection with them. You know, back in Donegal, I don't have to work that much at it, you know?
No, but it's about knowing yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
To then make use of your best personality traits in the best situation.
Absolutely.
So,
And I look back at it all now, to all the managers you talked about, and I think I've learned from every single one of them, the good and the bad. And I think they all had an effect on me. Some I got on well with, some I didn't get on as well with, but they give me something.
Because the miraculous thing about you is, you are a one club man, but not a one club man. And what I mean by that is, with Lou McCarrie, you left Celtic
I did. I went away.
You were going to go to Kumar?
I was.
And then Tommy Brown goes the other way.
Tommy comes the other way.
You tell me
you know, I look back on it now and I said, I wish I maybe had to go to Kilmarnock again. That's not to say I wouldn't have loved to. I wouldn't have almost gonna not have the time with Tommy and Billy Stark, and Billy I'm a very good friend of, and I like to think he is of me, and I went through that experience with them, and it was a tough enough experience for them, you know, and I would never have said no, I wouldn't have, but I would have loved to have gone to another club at that time just to experience what it was like and compare it back to Celtic as a player. And maybe network too also. And I think when you're at one club all your life, you don't network people.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm out of things now, and I'm saying I was away and working with the FAI for 8 years as technical director, so I had to step away from the Scottish game, and it took me about a year and a half to get back in and meet people again and know the players and do all that. So you certainly and it is about networking, unfortunately, in this game.
Yeah, but that's the type of thing, again, you talk about as you get older. That's the type of thing, even in business, as you get older, you start to realise, actually, there's a benefit of moving around and changing, because I create this network, which will be a benefit to me.
Absolutely.
When you...
I'm selling it.
In 1982, 1983, you're not thinking that way. But in 1992, 94, 95...
I wasn't thinking that way either. What I was wanting to do was I was wanting to work with Tommy and Billy.
Yeah.
You know, I was away from the club, so I got free. It wasn't a choice of mine. Probably if I was given another year, I would have stayed at the club.
Uh-huh.
Maybe. But I got the free, so you're gone. You wake up one morning after 17, 18 years of your life, and suddenly you're not getting out into the car on an automatic pilot to go into Parkhead to start training. You've got to say, what am I doing now? And getting that phone call, obviously, from Tommy to ask me to come down and talk to them. So that's why I wanted to go there. And I was motivated with that fact. When Tommy comes back, then he makes a phone call to see whether I come back to Celtic Football Club. There was only one choice. But when I look back at it now, 20 years later, I'm saying to myself, maybe I should have did move to Kilmarnock, and maybe I should have, what I did, what I would have loved to have done, is gone abroad. But at that time there was no agents as such. There was no opportunity for goalkeepers. Now they're travelling all over the place, and I travel a huge amount
in the modern world. After a couple of the international tours you had,
but
you'd have got that offer in the modern world.
In the modern world, you would. Yeah. And as I say, I'm fascinated with culture. I'm absolutely fascinated. You know, I mentioned going out to the former Soviet Union countries, going to Russia, going down into Italy, going into Spain, and I do that with UEFA, and I travel all over and up to Scandinavian countries. And I find that I have to also think about these people. And I would have loved to have learned languages. I would have loved to bring my family to experience those things. Those are things for me that would have been priceless. But I didn't do it, and I'm lucky now to get the opportunity to do it in my old age.
And you have quite a, and I'm conscious of your time, quite a varied career since you left Celtic. You lasted again for Celtic. Again, getting back to these, your moments are pivotal. Your St Patrick's Day debut, your 21st birthday debut, your last ever game for Celtic was a momentous game for Celtic, because it ended that barren trophy period.
I know, we were under so much pressure that day, you know, because it was Tommy had to win the game. It was against RJ. It wasn't a great game by any means, but to be part of it after being out of the team.
Do you know, it's a support, it's the nearest I've ever thought that, and Seville,
yeah,
the two times that I thought as a supporter I can hardly catch my breath, and I'm not doing anything.
Is that right?
I don't know how the players can,
yeah,
because I was so, yeah, nervous that if we didn't win,
what was going to happen. And, yeah, and for Tommy's sake too,
yeah,
I think that was the thing. And we had done so well, you know, under Tommy with the next for trying to beat Rangers, and we probably should have won it. Only for Andy Gorham we would have won the league, you know, and Tommy probably would have been there for quite a while after that. So for him, I think especially, you know, and there was change happening. But for me personally also, I was out of the team.
Yeah.
You know, I was there as a player, almost coach,
yeah,
goalkeeper coach, and to get back into the team and won a cup final. An incredible memory, going back up them stairs to do it, thinking that I would never do it again, and being freed from the club also.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So that only that not many people can write that one down.
Yeah.
You're free the year before. You come back as a player coach. You get back in your last game was to walk up the steps and pick up a cup for Celtic.
So what's your most memorable game in football?
I think the England game, probably from an international perspective, and from because it was England for Ireland and playing well, really playing and making about probably five or six really good saves, but also lucky saves. I keep going back to the word luck again. Another day, Ireland are going to score a hat trick.
Just so you know, as a fan, I was nervous for you because you were the Celtic goalkeeper, and you were playing England. Like what we think, the English media's perception of Scottish football.
Yeah.
I was desperate for you to succeed.
To succeed.
So that we could say, do you know what, we've got a great.
Absolutely, and I agree totally with you. That I was always conscious of. You know what I was always conscious of? Going over to Ireland with Celtic on pre-season tour or a friendly and performing well. Absolutely performing well. And I remember actually going over and playing in the RDS, Celtic against Shamrock Rovers, a pre-season game. And I was so hyped up, right, coming out to warm up and making sure, because I was, you know, the Irish people weren't aware too much at that point, probably the Celtic fans, but the Irish public in general weren't over about Scottish football. They didn't see much of it, not like now Sky TV's bringing it in, right into their door, into their living room. At that time they didn't like it. When I grew up, didn't see that many games, so when you went over there you had to perform, and that was, I was always conscious of that. And I remember running out that day, and I know a guy came to me with his boy to get an autograph, and I didn't send the autograph, and it's not like me, but I got a letter back from the man complaining to me, and I ignored this young boy, and I was so hyped up about trying to play well and prepare myself that I didn't do that, and I learned a big lesson from that, to be honest, that I should never do that again and put it into perspective, you know what I mean, and let's relax a little bit. And I think then the World Cup and all that helped me to do that, you know what I mean, and that's why international football and play against England, that was it. From a Celtic point of view, there was a couple of probably key ones. I think my one in the league, and that first one in your first championship. You know, you remember, you know, we played St Mirren, and you know, I think Rangers had won that day 4-0 against Aberdeen away. They were 4-0 up at half time. You know, and for us to win the league, I think that day was a huge win. We were only kids, you know, we were only young, really, 20 years old or whatever it was, 21. I think that was special. The centenary year was absolutely incredible. And I talk about the centenary year because it was like as if, here's a story of Celtic.
Yeah.
This is a book that started way back in, you know, in their very first game. We're now 100 years down the road. This has to be played out. We're only actors in it.
Yeah.
We're actors in it. And we're kind of playing this out, and it's going to happen in a certain way, and it did, to win a double. Now, I didn't play in the final because I was injured, and that broke my heart, to be honest. That really broke my heart. But to be part
of, I remember seeing Alan McKnight coming out and thinking, they're just giving him a taste of the atmosphere of Camden.
Yeah.
Because again, it's before the days of modern media to know that you weren't playing. And I'm thinking, they're just bringing him out to give him a taste of what it's like out to be on the Hamden pitch, and then thinking that you weren't playing.
So all in all, they're the ones. You know, there's loads of other ones playing against Ajax, playing against Juventus, being part of the Real Madrid, and on the bench today they beat Real Madrid. You know, you think of through all of these things, and you can pick out certain moments. You know, your best. I know where my best save is, and I talk about it. But anyway,
so you've got your book.
Yeah.
You've got your book, which is going to be.
The last line is called, and we're launching it next week over in Dublin on the 1st of October. So I go over and I do some signings over in Dublin and Easton's, and we're on radio the day before and through it, all the stations, bit of TV, talk to people, tell them about it. I hope it's not upsetting anybody, and I don't think it will. It wasn't. There was no intention to, but I have to write about certain things as we talked about today.
Yeah.
Give an in-depth into it. But it's a story. It really is a story of how somebody from the northwest coast of Donegal got to such a height with Celtic and joined the club, and then getting to the international stage, and how it has almost from there developed my persona that we talked about now. So it's the in-depth story around that, and it is a story.
Well, it's Jerry, yeah. We touched on there.
Yeah.
To, you talked about being a character in the Centenary season story of Celtic, yeah. And you're just playing the part. You played the part of Pat Bonner.
Packy Bonner.
In a fantastic fairy tale of a guy from Donegal,
yeah.
Who goes to the famous Glasgow Celtic.
Yeah.
And plays at such a young age and makes his debut for his country on his 21st birthday and plays in a team in its centenary season,
yeah.
When it's a club that's pivotally connected to the Irish immigrants,
yeah.
In Scotland.
Yeah.
It's nothing more of a fairy tale story.
Absolutely, and I hope to the people who read it, the Irish, you know, maybe the grandfather who's come away when he was a young boy from Ireland, or maybe a young man who's reading it about his grandfather or his father who came away, a mother came away, and they read it in that context. That I actually did the same. I left home on a bus, Doherty's bus, to come to Glasgow, not knowing, following my dream, but two bob in your pocket. And my dream was one of, you know, but other people probably had dreams to do, and it was hard work for them. But when they're reading it, I hope they throw themselves back into their own journey.
Mm-hmm.
And try and make some sort of kind of sense of it all. And Glasgow's been brilliant for many of us.
Yeah.
That's the point. Brilliant to all of us. And that's the kind of story it is, you know. And we're kind of, as I say, we launched in Dublin. We'll be launching here in Glasgow. We're on the 6th of October here with the press. We're having a night in Waterstones that open to the public,
yeah.
And then we're going to have another night on the 29th of October.
The 29th, a walkabout
in Glasgow also. And then we're going to do one in Donegal.
And just, I have to say, there's two free tickets for people at walkabout, and there'll be a question at the end of the podcast.
Great, brilliant. That's nice. And I look forward to the ones who won to meet them on the night. And then we're in Donegal to do a similar type of thing. We're going to actually go to Dublin and do a similar night. We're going to London to do it because there's a big demand from the Irish community there, and we're going down to Liverpool. So we have a real thing, and it's, I want that to be part of there, you know, and have a bit of crack also around it, you know, and that. And yeah, it's just good. I'm looking forward to it. I thought and I said many times I would never do it. I would never write a book, because I didn't want to upset people, maybe because I had to say something, and I was very conscious of getting the right context of it all. But people know, listen,
you can't write a book and then say everybody was nice and everybody was lovely, because nobody's going to read it.
No, and then that's right. It's not, but it is a story, and people know their own part in it. And I said it already, that whatever happened to me, whether it's the good, the bad, has helped the journey, and it's helped me to get to where I am today, and I'm still sane and I'm still alive. But it was also for a family reason, and then it's 25 years since that World Cup.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do it, this is the time to do it. Jerry McDade wrote it, and Jerry was pestering me to see what I do, and he felt that there was a great story there. And when he wrote a couple of chapters for me and put the card in front of me, I loved the way he wrote it. I loved the start of the book, and it was about my dad, all that kind of stuff. And we went with it, and it's been a great exercise, tough exercise.
Yeah.
We did it in 3 months, and I was very heavily involved in the whole process, editing and doing that.
Cathartic to get forced to review your whole life. Almost like going to see a therapist.
It is. Some of it's good, and as I said to you, some of it's not so good, because you're as I said, and I really don't want people to read it and think he's having a go at me. It's not. I'm trying to give it from my point of view.
Yeah.
And maybe having a go at me or creating that environment just sorted me out at times, you know. And I needed somebody to do that for me too, you know.
Okay, well, as I say, I've kept you long enough. Packy Bonner, Celtic's number one. Thank you.
Thank you, pleasure.
Danny boy, the pipes, the pipes are calling.
So I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Paki, and if you are interested in going along to the evening, you can buy tickets. If you are interested in winning tickets, what I will do to give you the option of, if you've not won them, you still get time to buy them. Obviously, the event is on Thursday, the 29th of October. And the closing date for this podcast to answer the question is midnight on Friday, the 9th of October. If you email harrybradycu@gmail.com, and the question is in the podcast, this is mentioned. Although we talk about Paki Bonner being a one-man club, Celtic did officially sign him from an Irish youth team. So it's the name of that Irish youth team that Paki was signed. So two tickets for the evening with Paki Bonner at Walkabout. Answer by midnight on Friday the 9th of October. And as you heard in the podcast, Paki will go up and tell Paki you won it listening to the Celtic Underground podcast, and he'll say hello. From whom did Celtic sign Paki Bonner? Email harrybradycu, that's Harry Brady, all one, CU, as in Celtic Underground, so harrybradycu@gmail.com. And good luck to all. That's enough from me. There'll be more podcasts along soon. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night. God bless. Pity Effie Ambrose makes two mistakes. Otherwise, we're on 4 points. Good night. God bless. And I am dead, as dead I will maybe go out and find the place where. So